Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Welcome, everybody, to Everyone Loves Pizza. Our guest this week is none other than former pastor, turned caddy, and now author, Mark Mylitz. Did I say it right?
You did.
Thank God. All right, because I had all these other enunciations in my head, and I had to ask you before the show. And it was only like a minute ago I asked you, and I still almost forgot. My podcast and bestie is here with us, Dave Ungar, the lawyer from California. I'm here just south of where you work, my friend. Mark is a caddy at one of the world-renowned golf courses, an amazing property I've had the luxury to be on once. You are a caddy at Whistling Straits here in Kohler, Wisconsin.
I sure am. Such a beautiful place to be. Cold place to be, though, as you know.
Yeah, how was the last couple weeks of the season there, buddy?
Oh, terrible. And hard to think they were going to stay open all the way to the, you know, just over a week ago. And then we've gotten 10 inches of snow, and I think overnight it's going to be 12 below wind chill. So we went from golf to golf, furthest thing from your mind, in a hurry.
To shoveling for me. Right away, I want to get into it. Caddy Tales. There it is. Caddy Tales, a looper search for lost golf balls and what he found instead. I finished the book this morning. As a golfer, I loved it. I loved like acquainting like the experiences on the golf course to life. And I think even if you're not a golfer, you'll very much enjoy this book. It's a book of stories that equal life lessons, in my opinion. What do you want people to take away from this book?
Yeah, I think golf is the perfect metaphor for life. And, you know, you can find lessons in all of sports, but I have found golf especially meaningful in that way. And I originally had the idea when I started the book, or the idea of the book, that it was just going to be funny stories and maybe even a little more cynical take on golfers, because you see so much crazy stuff out there. There's no shortage of material to make fun and to laugh and all that. And then just evolved through life experience, and then also experiences out on the golf course, where my life as a caddy has been a very healing part of my life, and my time out on the course has just been amazing, and the people on the course have been a lifeline. And so what I really hope people take from it, especially resonating with people who've gone through some hard times or going through some hard times, is that just like in golf, there's going to be some failure, a lot of failure, and there's going to be some shanks, some misses, all that kind of stuff that really can leave you frustrated, ready to just break things, beat your head against a wall. But if you keep moving forward, you keep focusing on that next shot, you know, there's hope, there's opportunity. And I think over time, things get better. Over time, somebody's golf game hypothetically is going to get better. I know the analogy falls apart for some people there, but with some time and some practice, I think it rings true that you'll see improvement. But certainly that's on the golf course. But most importantly to me, that people would see that in life.
Yeah, you can definitely take a lot of lessons away, patience and understanding and knowing that, you know, sometimes it's not the worst thing in the world if you're not doing your best. Dave and I like live across the country from each other, and all summer and spring and fall, because I can't golf in the winter, we share a lot of what we do on each side of the country. But and now Dave will rub it in my nose for the next 3 months when he's out golfing and I'm not. But before we keep talking here, I want to plug caddytails.co, right?
Yeah, that's you.
CADDIE.
Although
Go
I
ahead.
just got an email today from somebody trying to sell me the domain to give me that M after caddytails.com was taken, you know? And so I think they probably want to bilk me out of like 100 grand to buy the M after Co. But I think I'll stick with caddytails.co.
Yeah, that's I would find the price out first. I mean, that M isn't
Yeah.
how much is that M worth, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's like there's every single thing is taken, it feels like. And X has just started giving unused account names away. But this just out of the blue today. I am selling caddytails.com. Let me know if you're interested. So anyway, but for now it's caddytails.co.co. And if people go there, they can order a signed copy of the book, and they're entered into a drawing to win a free round of golf for two that I give away after every 100 that are sold. And that I gave a lot of golf away this year. And then they could also just look for Amazon search Caddy Tails.
Tell everybody what else is on the website, because I do believe you're wearing at least one thing that you can get on the website.
Yeah, this one is a demo piece, actually. I designed it wrong and they cut the hat off, so I wear this
Oh,
around the
what
house
is that,
all. Yeah, there's
lobotomy?
some swag. There's some Caddy Tails branded wear, hoodies and hats especially. And also, there's a line called Next Shot, and that's really become my heart, is that there's always a next shot, is what I like to say. Focus on that next shot. There's nothing we can do about the one behind us. And so I think that's something that every golfer could really resonate with. And hopefully, by the end of this week, I'm going to have up some Caddy towels, doing a collaboration with another golf brand that I've met on X and actually have caddied for.
Do you want to
Kind of a cool thing about the golf
plug them?
community.
You want to plug them?
Yeah, 35 by 70 golf. Go check them out as well. And you know, I love the relationships. That golf to me is about relationships. And Golf X hat, you know, you feel like you get to know some of these people after a while. Certainly there's been people who've read my book or whatever that have come out to the golf course. And that's been a real meaningful part of this life to me that has been bigger than just the actual shots on the golf course.
You talk about stuff like that, and Dave and I pretty much have acquainted, like, what we do podcasting wise is the best thing is meeting all these people. Like, Dave and I have never met each other, but we talk to each other multiple times every week, and we do multiple projects together. Dave, I think you're about to ask a question there. Let me get out of your way.
Hey Mark, good to talk to you. So I want to ask you about the book and the process of doing the book, because I've self-published one book on my own, and I know it's an enormous amount of work to get anything out there. So, from the standpoint of the book, from concept to getting it, you know, actually published and out there to the public, can you talk about how that process was, some of the trials and tribulations, and how satisfying was it for you to get that out there to the masses like that?
That's a great question, because right now I'm in the process of the second book and reliving all of that, and actually kind of having a harder time with the second book because this first one was a just it flowed from the heart, so it was easier than this one is. But you know, really, once I got serious about writing, you know, I'd had the idea, and I kept talking about it. But once I got serious about writing, it only took me a couple of months because I do feel like that's a gift I've been given that I can articulate through writing pretty well, or at least efficiently. I guess it's up to other people to decide on well. I hope they do. And then, you know, I self-published, which I've learned is actually the best way to go. The benefit to getting an actual publisher is they can give you an advance, which I'd love during like the winter, these lean months when I'm not
Sure,
caddying, but
sure.
really the opportunities to market and to sell more, make more are there in self-publishing. Maybe it's not as prestigious to people, but I think it's actually better. And so I worked with a company who helped me design the cover and then also edit it. You know, that took a little bit, and they thankfully handled all the logistics as far as getting it up online and all that kind of stuff. What there was a huge push right away. Not a huge, I guess that's, again, all relative, but people bought it from Amazon. And then I realized there's an opportunity to, I kept getting people asking me if they, you know, if they could get a signed copy. So I threw that out there, really had a kind of a nice feedback with that. And then instead of doing ads, which is a huge part of the self-publishing industry, like you are not going to just have people discover your book. You've got to do ads and stuff. People spend a tremendous amount on Facebook ads. I found that for a similar cost, I could just give away a bucket list trip to Whistling Straits. And it would cost the equivalent of what maybe I would have spent on ads. And I get to make somebody's day and sell some more books in the process. So
I'm just going to throw this out here. If you want to give one of those away to me, I that is a good excuse as any to go to Wisconsin. So I'm just going to throw that out
there. Actually, the hard part about me, the people pleaser in me has struggled a little bit because only, you know, one person can win. And, you know, I have all these people sending me their messages and stuff about how meaningful it would come be to come with their dad or whatever. And I'm like, oh,
listen, don't pick me, Dave. I'm already on his ass to come to Wisconsin for a golf trip. He can stay with me and our other buddy DP. Yeah. And we're an hour and 15 minutes away. And we're planning to get together anyway. But
Dave, you come to Wisconsin. I'll make sure to get you a deal. I can get you.
I'll come to Wisconsin. You guys come to California. I can't get you a deal at Pebble, but you know, maybe you're going to caddy for us.
Yeah. So people message me and I'm like, I don't think people realize what little pull and influence I have in the whole golf operation there. I am a tiny piece of their, you know, huge machine. So I love the opportunity to have gotten my story out there. I've gotten more comfortable. Real thing that was holding me back for a long time was just putting yourself out there is really scary. And I was really, really worried about reviews, about trolls, to be honest. The internet and X, quite frankly, are a cesspool. And there are some people in your life that no matter what, they will only see you by your worst moments. Now, thankfully, I have found that those people are lesser and lesser as time goes on. And that there's been an opportunity to meet new people and to grow and improve as a person. And it's made some difference. And I've become more content and more comfortable in my own skin. But there's no doubt I was terrified. And, you know, probably still am in a certain level.
Without stepping on what could possibly be in the next book. My question for you is, what was the process like learning to be a caddy? Like, what things, like, so you, like, you grew up playing sports, right? Like, you were a sports guy. Like, you've golfed before. You know what's going on. Like, you know golf etiquette. But, like, so I've golfed, like, since I was 6 years old. I'm in my middle 40s. I think I know golf etiquette pretty well. Those are just my cats hating each other right now. I'm sorry. But I would have no idea how to be a good caddy to somebody. So please explain that process a little bit to me, learning that.
Oh, gosh. I look back now and wonder how I survived the first year, how I even got hired. And there's no doubt that there is a certain level of just baptism by fire, get thrown to the wolves, that exists. Maybe it wouldn't exist in a place like Augusta that has a limited need and a prestige, you know, but like where I work, for instance, there's 200 caddies, you know, there's a big need. And so the barrier to entry is a little easier, but then they thrust you out onto this extremely difficult championship golf course with some very, very type A individuals. And I didn't know what I was doing. You go through a training process, and their training process is actually really good. And you have people there to help you and support you, but there's a level of you just learn as you go. And I was just reflecting on that this year with one of my buddies who I caddy with a lot. And it's like, I know now every inch of that golf course. And somebody could hit a ball, and even if we're 200 yards away from it, I have a pretty good idea how far they are, that they're going to need to hit that next shot and a line, so that if I have to go with the other player, for instance, I can hand them a club and a suggestion and they can go. There's no way I could have done that my first year. And, you know, to be honest, you're just, everything's moving faster. And so if you've ever heard about like quarterbacking in the NFL, there's rookies who maybe get by on some talent or maybe some past experience, like you mentioned, playing sports in the past or playing golf in the past. But eventually the game slows down. And that's what I would say the benefit of each passing season is the game slows down. You just kind of aren't as frantic out there. I was humble enough to learn from the veterans. I have found there are some young caddies who maybe don't come with the humility. There's some who are totally deferential, but there's some who maybe think they know it all. I think they struggle. And then I, knowing that I was not good, found who the good caddies were, the veterans, and soaked things up like a sponge. That was the biggest help, was watching them and then mimicking them out there.
Like, I imagine, you know, knowing where to be and things like that, but you said the course. Like, how long specifically did it take you to learn that course? Because I think of all the different courses I've played now, I play the same stupid course. They're not stupid, but I play the same courses all the time, 8, 9, 10 times a year. But you are on this championship course, right? That I play it on the video game, and I still don't know how to play it very well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'd say that there, you kind of learn the standard shots or whatever, target lines, pretty quickly. What you don't have any concept of is how to deviate if things, you know, just really gear off, or veer off course. So I look back and say, I don't know if the whole first year I was very good at that. Or like adapting to the player that I had and being able to adjust target lines. Like, let's say you have a guy who can, I had a few guys this year who could hit over 300 yards consistently. Well, they're playing an entirely different golf course than the dude who's hitting at 230. My first year, I probably told them both off the tee box, hit it to the same place. And probably screwed the guy who hit it far. And now, you know, those types of things are a lot easier to manage.
How about the greens? That's got to be the most difficult thing, right? Even you're probably second guessing yourself sometimes.
Yeah, there's still days. And I would say if you have a player who's a real aggressive person, who lives and dies by it and stuff, you like you'll say, oh, I think this is like a cup out left. If they go, really? A young caddy, you know, it's like, well, maybe not a cup or what. Those moments are fewer and further between, but you still occasionally have them. An honest caddy has got to say that occasionally they're second guessing themselves, or there's some tricky ones. This year, it seemed on holiday weekends, we had somebody who wasn't our normal guy cutting the holes, and we'd come in and be like, what the heck? Like, that was, first of all, like, unmakeable. And secondly, I didn't know what it did. And that's a pretty lonely place to be out on the golf course when you're working for tips, for one, but also with just strong personalities.
As a golfer myself, I just heard you say there are places a greenskeeper can put the hole on a green that it is nearly impossible to make probably a putt over 4 feet, 5 feet, 6 feet.
No doubt. Yeah, no doubt. And that, I think we have like an unbelievable grounds crew. Like, I literally started thinking this only seems to happen on holiday weekends, which is also a time when you have more leisurely golfers, you know, because for a number of reasons. And I'm like, what the heck? The other guy's on vacation, so they, you know, they got somebody. And I think they think it's fun or something, but man. But on a normal basis, I think, you know, I know the greens. Actually, we have two courses where I'm at, the Straits and the Irish course. And seasoned caddies would tell you, actually, they still struggle with the Irish course more than the Straits. very much more subtle greens and stuff. But anyway, the bigger issue is when you're dealing with somebody who's an intense personality and is getting on you, that you got to have some confidence out there or it's going to be a miserable day for you.
Mark, let me ask you something about going in the other direction. You know, you're talking about people who are hyper intense out there. Like Tony and I have a big difference in our golfing skill. He's like, you know, really good, almost scratch. And I, if I play up to my capacity, I'll break 100, you know, that sort of thing. So like, for somebody like me, when you deal with people, and I know people like me go out there and they're going to take on a course like Whistling Straits, which is well beyond where we have any normal right to be. How do you approach caddying for somebody like my skill level who is, you're going to go out there, you're going to say, this guy's going to be way overmatched by this course, but let me try and give him the best experience possible.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I will say that almost, yes. All things being equal, do you want a better golfer because it's an easier walk? Yes. But I often tell my players on the list of things that most caddies care about, score is not in the top five. How well you hit it is not in the top five. You want guys who are fun, good attitude, have a good pace of play, hopefully generous, all that kind of stuff. And I would rather caddy for somebody who shoots 110 then with like a 5 to 7 handicap, it tends to be that's the range where you see this, where they're just angry the whole round because they think they're way better than they are. And the course is just, you know, harder than where they normally play. So they came with these sky high expectations and the course doesn't give it to them. I'll take the person hacking it all over the course any day of the week over that. I think that there's sometimes with a really good golfer, it's super fun. And, you know, you can really exhibit your golf knowledge more and your course knowledge and all that. But if you're with a high handicapper, it's more about encouraging them and motivating them and keeping a positive attitude and having fun with them than it is, you know, you can suggest 150-yard club versus 140-yard club. It may not make that much of a difference. It does with the scratch or better golfer, but not with the person shooting over 100. So for that, it's like, let's have fun. Let's have good conversation. Let's, you know, joke around, all that kind of stuff.
Let's do a public service announcement for caddies all over the world, okay? Don't make your golf bag so heavy, people. Mark, would it be wrong if I showed up at Whistling Straits and we were going out, me, you, and Dave, and I've like got everything, like my bag down to the minimum. Perfect, right? But I want to bring a couple extra things, and I wore a little tiny backpack.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
I was reading your book thinking if I ever get there and there's a couple things I want to take, I can carry a little bit, take it on and off, take the load off, you know?
And, you know, I talk about bag weight. We're not unreasonable. But the phrase that I would say is help us help you. The lighter the load, the quicker we're going to get around, you know, the more energetic we're going to be. But sometimes people are packing. I have a picture and I've hesitated to post it because I don't want to get in trouble. But it's literally like 8 water bottles in this person's golf bag. And you're like, what in the world? We've had some, like, I'm a big guy. And I had one this year where when I first met the person, I literally could not lift it to my shoulder. Like, not, oh, this would be, I could not, like, get it up onto my shoulder. And you're like, what are they thinking? And that person ended up being really cool, though, and we changed their bag out. But so, you know, sometimes people just, I chalk it up to there's a tiny percentage of people who are just so in their own world that they think they need all the stuff or, you know, whatever. Don't care. I think most people just don't know and never carry their own bags. They're usually on a golf court, whatever, and we work kindly with those people. Yeah.
That's me.
Most people aren't taking walking caddies for all their rounds, and so, you know, they don't know. But, like, we're carrying 2 hard course to walk. I don't want to sound like a baby, but it just helps us help you.
If you park your car, walk to the clubhouse, get your cart, and then come back to get your bag, your bag's probably too heavy for the caddy.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. I mean, I've had some this year that were, you know, they show up and they're 40 plus pounds a piece, you know. Go walk 8 to 10 miles with that on your back, and yeah.
So I got a couple different things. Actually, before I get to a couple different things, I have a quote that stuck with me from your book, and so Dave's right. I can play well in the 70s on courses I know. I'm going to be honest. A game travels fine, but when you don't know stuff, you don't know stuff, and I can become frustrated. I try not to let it affect the people around me. But one of the quotes from your book, I just stuck with me and wants make me become a better playing partner next year, even though I don't think I'm a bad one, but I could be better, is golf drives the holiness out of the best of them.
Yeah.
Oh, that stuck with me.
Yeah. Yeah. It exposes a lot of things about us. It also magnifies our weaknesses. And sometimes it just brings them to the surface. And you know, it's not like somebody's a terrible person if they have a bad day or a tantrum out there or whatever, but it's something that I would suggest they work on. And I think that, you know, because there's behaviors that people accept of themselves on the golf course that they wouldn't accept of themselves in any other arena. You know, they wouldn't do it at work, for crying out, or without some sort of consequence, I would presume. And yeah, just it drives the holiness right out of them. And, you know, you see a lot of, you know, I will say most golfers are cool and great. But, you know, some of the crazy stories are what sell and what people want to hear, you know. So they magnify. I think that people get frustrated and they let it show. And not only is it not necessarily fun for the people around them, I'm just not convinced that it ever helps. That's maybe, you know, the biggest point that I would drive home to them is I just don't see anyone out there getting all crazy and starting to play better. As a matter of fact, I see one bad hole turn into two because of that behavior. And the people who I see get over the one bad hole are the people who can have some emotional intelligence. So I've come to believe very, very strongly about that. One, because I see it bear itself out true on the golf course, but if you want to make a connection to the book and the lessons I've learned, I was the person who used such a perfectionist in my past that it drove me to the point of destroying my life and hurting my family and hurting many others because I didn't know how to control the emotions or the feelings with a lack of perfection. And so I started feeling empty, and the least start filling that void with the wrong things, alcohol and other stuff. And it never helped, you know, it never helped for me to behave that way. It only hurt. It only, you know, drove me down. So that's on a mega scale. That's very important to deal with. But I see the same types of things bear themselves out on the golf course, and I've come to be pretty passionate about it.
I can't, you know, say enough about the book and people who do golf, especially if you find yourself struggling mentally with the game, read this book. I really enjoyed the way the life lessons are taught here. I mean, your past as a pastor, like I you know, you've had to prepare sermons and do things of that nature and put things together like that. And I found a lot of solace in what you said in here. I think it's going to mean a lot to a lot of people. And I think a lot of people who've already read it when they hear this are going to say the same thing.
Well, and, you know, and I also thank you for that. I also believe, you know, 7 years ago, I would have been very fine with it being the end. You know, I'm not a suicidal person or anything like that, but I didn't have hope. I was in a very dark place. And, like, I lived my life kind of shaking and 100% of the time my thoughts being confused, but consumed by very bad things, you know, and a combination of fear, sorrow, shame, guilt, all that kind of stuff. And so I didn't see much hope. And if I didn't have a family that I love, I wonder how dark I would have gone, you know. The point is that I think sometimes people in their lives are experiencing those same things. And then on the golf course too, I've noticed that people have a bad hole, a bad shot, a bad front nine, whatever, it so easily becomes what they allow to be their story. They allow that to be what's defining them. And I find it's the default that people get negative instead of seeing that, you know, you're a shot away, you're a hole away, you're a back nine away. Or if not, there's another round, you know, the next day or whatever. And I want to convey to people that hope on a small scale. I do it out on the golf course. And one of the compliments I get as a caddy is that people find me encouraging. And I take that very seriously because I'm intentional about it. But I obviously want to convey that on a grander scale. The funny thing about it is, yeah, I was a pastor in the past, but I'm much more emotionally mature and able to do that work now than I ever was back then. I'm just doing it in a different arena. But I have a sincerity of mission, I guess, that is no less defined than it was back then. It's just different. So I am in a place where I go, you know, 7 years ago, I didn't see any sort of hope. Life isn't all roses now. Things keep breaking at my house. I just had to buy a new furnace I didn't want. I have a $2,600 car repair I don't want.
You're going to be happy you have that furnace tonight, my friend.
Yeah, 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 I know. But you know, one, you can always find the bright side. I mean, I'm like the alternative would be dying tonight. But also just, you know, we've come so far. And so there's hope and opportunity. There's always a next shot. I don't want to preach at people, but it's certainly something that I believe so strongly that I want others to believe for themselves.
You mentioned your family. Go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
Go ahead, Tony, because I had a more general question for Mark. If you want, I got something more specific to ask him. Go ahead.
No, I was going to get into a couple other things outside of the book here. So go ahead.
And you can see we really planned this out well.
Right, Mark? I did.
I know you did. Let me just ask you a general question about golf. How do you feel about the state of the game right now? I mean, you've got PGA, you've got the whole LIV thing, LIV now modifying their format. Are they going to merge? Are they going to not merge? The game, at least during the pandemic, it surged in popularity because, you know, everybody, once they were able to go outside again, they could do all this stuff. And now you've got, you know, what, three seasons of full swing? Now we're coming into a fourth season, if I remember, Tony, or is this the third season coming up? I forget. But, you know, golf is seemingly surging in popularity in some places, but in other places, you know, it's still got that elitism attached to it, right? It's a sport that's not accessible to everybody, or at least it has that perception. So I'm just kind of curious, what's your take on the game in general and where things could be better or worse, that sort of thing?
Yeah. I'll say first off, I'm not as passionate about like PGA versus LIV as a lot of people out there. What I will say is that I think no matter what changes they come with in that arena, we've got to be cognizant of the fact that just what people are watching and how they're consuming it is changing. Other than the NFL, everything is like the NBA doesn't have the viewership it had. You know, sports are becoming more regional, or, you know, viewership is less except for whatever. And I think there's no doubt that people's attention spans make things like the YouTube videos that somebody like Bryson does more attractive. You know, like it or not, that's just what I think is a reality. And so I think other than the majors, I'm not sure that viewership is going to rise unless they get, you know, are able to consistently get big names into the tournaments and make those tournaments compelling. They're always going to have the hardcore golf fan. I think the average people are finding the content they want in shorter snippets. As far as the game in general, you bring up a interesting thing about it being accessible. I'm a little concerned with how expensive it, not a little, I'm a lot. And I happen to work at a place that's very expensive. And every now and then somebody wants to troll me in a comment, you know, about how expensive it is. And, you know, there's the capitalist in me, or the person who can't, you know, I can't go take a big European vacation right now. There's just some things we aren't in a position to do, and I'm not going to sit and cry about it. So, you know, sometimes we accept where we're at in our life. But it seems to me that there's just a move towards private golf, and these ridiculously expensive high-end clubs with the tiny memberships with, you know, X number of, you know, hundreds of thousands to join and stuff, that I don't think that's going to attract people to the game. The flip side about attracting people to the game on moderately priced public courses is that they're so packed to increase revenue that all I hear from people is complaints about the pace of play and how long a round takes. And so that drives a lot of the clientele that I meet at Whistling Straits to private golf, unless they're from Chicago, where they see that, you know, I think they've priced a lot of, like, I get, like, most of the people who come from all over the country, like, seem to belong to a club and whatever. But Chicago, we get a higher volume of players. So there are some, you know, everyone there probably makes a good living that we have out. But there is a, we see some who aren't uber rich, and they'll say, I can't join a club, it's just way too pricey. And then they'll say, but there's not a lot of, you know, the public courses are so full, or you have to do this. I don't know the answer to that, but it is something that I hear quite a bit that concerns me. And I know, just as a person with a family of six, and although I have one daughter who's now getting her big girl income and off my payroll, if I didn't have the free golf options that I have through my work, you know, I'd be priced out of a lot of places as well. So, yeah, that's kind of my perception.
I'll say this to the people like me that is one of the biggest things that I struggle with on muni courses, where it's like a 5-hour round at Whistling is one thing. A 5-hour round on a 6,200 yard course is a whole different thing. But I will say this, you have to remember that the biggest golf boom of all time just happened. Yeah. I was a club tech at a big retailer during that time, and it just blew up. That round, year after year, I think it was 50 million and then another 50 million plus rounds, 20 to 21.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, COVID was amazing for golf if you were selling stuff or whatever. And but yeah, you really hear frustrations about the pace of play. Low hanging fruit on Twitter for me is if I wanted to just get some engagement, I'd go say something about pace of play or whatever and just let the people go.
The one thing I will say about accessibility that may be making a turn, and price-wise for equipment, is I've heard positive reviews on the $1 Amazon golf ball.
Really?
Go ahead and watch Rick Shields' video. He does a great job of comparing it to a Pro V1, not just out in a short game scenario in real life, but also takes it with the long game in the simulator. I'm not going out to buy the $1 Amazon ball for next year, but I will tell you right now, I switched from Titleist to Vice just because it's $20 less a dozen, and I feel like I get the same performance, just a tiny bit less spin greenside. But like, I just think that that's a cool thing that hopefully Amazon can come out with a quality line for people that maybe necessarily they can afford $50 or $60 a week to go play around, but they need a better, more accessible equipment.
Yeah, sure. I just go into the weeds at work and grab a bunch of
plenty of probies there.
Yeah, yeah. I'll never buy a golf ball again. That's a perk of the job.
Like you're saying, I mean, even within the top line manufacturers, you know, like Titleist has got the Pro V1, but they've got other golf balls that are pretty good quality that for a lot cheaper, you know, that sort of thing. Like TaylorMade has a distance ball in addition to the TP5. And yeah, I mean, if you've got like your swing speed, Tunney, that's a different story. For somebody like me, it's like, you know, the cheaper balls are probably going to work just as well, if not better than the top of the line ones.
Yeah, I mean, no disrespect when I say this, but there's a high number of golfers I meet each season that the equipment means nothing, you know, or like little tweaks in the equipment. You know, they've got to learn how to swing well first, or you know, be consistent. But yeah, I think that. The clientele I see, I joke, they'll buy just about anything. And I have to remind myself sometimes, like, what I'm seeing isn't real. And this is a lower percentage of people. You know, there's a lot of dudes in their 30s who aren't at this point where they're able to come to a place like Whistling Straits. They got families, they got young kids. They're looking for deals and stuff. But I'd be plenty of golfers who, you put anything out there online and they're buying it.
All right, we're going to step away.
Let me ask Mark one last thing before we move on. When I first started, Mark, I just bought, like, you know, clubs off Amazon, you know, the full set. I started off with the cheapy Wilson ones because I was just starting, and then I got like a TaylorMade, like the RBZs or something like that. And then I went and got a fitting done, and that was probably a smart move. How important do you think, like, a fitting is for, you know, for golfers? Or do you say, well, if you're a certain skill level, it makes sense? Or do you think, like, everybody could kind of benefit from that?
Yeah, the sense I get in talking to the golfers that I meet, because that gets talked about a lot, is that everyone feels like they benefit from it. So I would just use that anecdotally to say that it doesn't hurt. I do think the benefit is greater the better the golfer, you know, and making the who's got smaller gains to try and attain. And so, but I think a lot of people have fun with the process and get big eyes, and I hear really good things from the people who do it.
Get fit for your grips as well, folks. That is something that is just as important. I will tell you that right now. All right, let's move away from golf. I want to talk to you. I have a feeling that you might be a Star Wars fan.
No, not even a little.
Wow, because you got a couple of kids who are named a certain couple of names that made me think.
Yeah. And it wasn't until, like, so for him, for those out there, I have a son named Luke and a daughter named Leah. And it wasn't until maybe Luke was, he's 13 now, 8 or 9, that all of a sudden it hit me. Oh, I'm not kidding you. That might sound insane to people, but there is absolutely no, Luke was always the name we were going to have for a boy. Leah was like a spur of the moment. Oh, the baby popped out. It's another girl.
Is your wife a Star Wars fan? Or no. Because, I mean, that's such... Luke is a common name, but Leia is very rare. So,
yeah,
that's,
so,
I mean,
yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, we just like the name, and there's some biblical references to it, but, like, yeah, not at all. So, but I think it's funny that you asked that, because people would...
I'm reading the book, and I see the list of names come across at one point of it, and I'm like, there's a question to ask Mark when I have him on. Well, you know, talk about your trip this last weekend, because I saw a little bit of it on X. You were at the Big House. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, the game didn't go as you wanted, but it was probably a really cool trip with your kid.
Yeah, so we... Our best friends from college are from Michigan. He's actually a pastor, and his wife is a friend from college as well. And they just became family, and we used to always vacation together. And I think I talk about this in the book about, you know, finding your roaring fans and your, you know, your foursomes and all that, your life caddies, all that, basically your support system. And these are people who never left our side during a very difficult time when a lot of people did. And they, you know, there's nothing now that could ever cause me to be anything but have love for them, you know? So we have done, we did Thanksgiving with them, even tracing back to well before any, we moved from Michigan. And we didn't go last year because my wife's parents here are Asian, and we thought, well, we should start, you know, spending the holidays with them. We just missed going to Michigan so much. So we got together with them, which is just great because you're with people who you just have a small circle of people in your life who are just ride or dies. It's, there's a rhythm there. It's awesome. And it's also awesome to go and see kids who've grown up together, but we've known them all since babies, and have everybody around, like, the Thanksgiving table. And my friend even remarked, it's just great to see them all growing up. So you have a great sense of pride, especially since they hadn't seen my son for 2 years, to hear the compliments they were giving to him. Because when he's still at the age where you see big changes in maturity. So anyway, that was great. But the big part, the centerpiece of the trip, and this is what's amazing, 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 amazing. I just mentioned that we're going to Michigan. All of a sudden, I get this message from a guy who's a staff member at the University of Michigan who follows me on Twitter, and he offers me his seats. And I'm like, dude, are you serious? Like, I don't want to be mooching off people. I don't want to. I'm like, are you serious? Like, what the heck? You know, and I think, I don't know why he didn't go. Maybe because he thought they were going to lose. He was going to be out of town. It was going to be too cold, whatever. He's not allowed to sell them. And so he offers them to me. And I'm like, this is going to be unbelievable. So I went with my son, and I tweeted this out, and I think I write about it in the book. I'm not sure. But when I have father-son golf trips, a lot of caddies don't like father-son golf trips or husband-wives because it's one pocket tipping for two people. Okay, so when you're just looking at the bottom line, that's not the caddy's favorite loop. I'm not going to say I always love couples, but father-sons, I love, and especially the loops, you'll see this, when the son is like 13, 14, now you don't get many of those, but they say he's around 13 or 14, which is my son. They're still at the age where they're growing. They can come out and play some golf. They're usually pretty good if dad spent that money. But they're still young enough that their dad's their hero, or they still show some affection. And you'll catch out of the corner of your eye that kid going up and sneaking a hug from their dad or to their dad out on the round because they're just so thankful to be out there at Whistling Straits. And I'm like, this is awesome. Well, I basically had those same moments with my son in a place that's very special to me, with a lot of memories, and that's Michigan football, Michigan Stadium at the huge game. I didn't think that Michigan was going to win. I didn't believe for a second they were going to win. And so I didn't go with like this, my heart set on it. It was about taking my son to the big house, letting him see that. And we had the time of our life. Now, by the end of the game, we were absolutely frozen through. And before we left the stadium, we went into the bathroom and thawed off for five, just stood there in the stinky, disgusting bathroom and warmed up for 5 minutes before we went back out to the car.
You got to stay warm, my friend. You got to stay warm.
The beauty of the Midwest, man. That is the beauty of the Midwest there.
Yeah. But, you know, like doing, you see out on the golf course, these relationships, like I mentioned, golf's about relationships. And you see, you got your golf buddies, you've got your, there's corporate ones where people are building business ones. Husbands and wives are staying connected, but fathers and sons are special. And I love seeing it. And I look forward to those memories with my son. And we're going to have them out on the golf course someday too. You know, this happened to be a Michigan game, but over time I'm like, yeah, this is what I want to do. I want to go on a trip every year with them to do this. It's just what it's all about to me. And then I don't, and that's why I say, don't care what you score. I'm like, If my whole day was going to be wrecked because Michigan didn't play well, well, that's not fair to me or my son. In the same way, you spend $1,000+ to play golf with your son, you hit a few bad drives. Like, it's got to be bigger than that, isn't it?
No, I couldn't agree more. So in our network, we've done a lot of things. We started as a professional wrestling network, right? We found a bunch of guys that loved it since like the 80s. And Dave and I are currently going back and reviewing all the old stuff and chronologically covering it. We also got into pop culture. We got Bandwagon Nerd Show that covers movies and things of that nature. But recently, Dave, do you have a question for Mark here? We've started covering a little unidentified history. So before I get to the last question of the show, Dave has something he'd like to ask you.
So, Mark, I just followed you on X. And
yes.
If you opt to follow me back, no obligation. I just want to warn you ahead of
Boy,
time.
Boy, Dave is asking for a lot of things on this interview today.
I should click follow right now.
I'm just warning him ahead of time about this, Tony. I feel I owe it to him. So you'll get a lot of sports, a lot of pro wrestling, but you're going to get a lot of stuff because I've gotten heavily involved in the topic of UFOs, which are now called UAPs and that sort of thing. So I want to ask, because you're what we call in my quarter of X, we call you a normie. You're a normal person because you probably don't sit there and engage in this stuff like we do. I'm just curious. I mean, and it's all the buzz now because there was a big documentary that Tony and I reviewed that came out called Age of Disclosure, and that got mainstream media talking. So I got to ask you, what do you think of UAPs and UFOs and this whole phenomenon? I mean, are you a believer? Are you a hardcore skeptic? And I know for being a former pastor, this sometimes causes issues with people because it does, in certain ways, conflict with religious teachings, that sort of thing. But yeah. I got to ask you, what do you think of all this stuff?
Is this a trick question of any sort? Or you, no, it'd be like.
Well, I am an attorney, so you got to be careful.
Oh yeah, yeah.
See, Mark, now you can leverage any favors you give Dave into lawyer advice in the future as well.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
No, you know. So I kind of adopt the, the belief more than anything to not have super strong opinions about that which I do not know a lot about. That's a, a sign of aging, I guess. I would say that I am not a believer, but I'm not like a definitive unbeliever that there's, this universe and is so vast. I am open to the idea that there are plenty of things we don't know and that are beyond us.
That's a fair comment there.
But I don't know that. I mean, but I also couldn't define it, like until it's revealed, I see, that maybe I should go on Joe Rogan. Hey, Joe, you listening? I'm sure he has some strong beliefs and has talked about that kind of stuff.
He just did a 3.5-hour podcast on a show called American Alchemy. Jesse Michael's show. Joe doesn't do very many podcast interviews, so for him to go on anybody's show is pretty big deal. And I mean, yeah, 3 hours talking about this exact topic. So yeah, Joe.
And what did he conclude?
Joe's pretty heavily involved with that. So
I think he's a believer in it, isn't he?
He is.
With skepticism, he takes it with a grain of salt. He knows he's not going to believe everything,
Right. I think like the abduction phenomenon, whether people have been abducted and taken aboard spaceships. I think he struggles with that.
Yeah. Right.
Probably because he hasn't been educated as well. And I mean, it does have a certain stigma and people think like, oh, it's all, people, crazy people. But I think as far as the actual technology involved, has the government retrieved objects that they're trying to reverse engineer? Does China have that? Oh, I think he buys into that 1,000%. the more stuff that we call the woo sort of stuff, the aspect of things, I think he struggles with that. And that's understandable because that's a little hard to wrap your head around. But the actual, there's lots of data, sightings, credible people who you look at them and say, well, if they're crazy, we're in trouble because they were in charge of the U.S. Navy and they're in charge of the FAA and all this other stuff. It's like, if they're crazy, we've got some real problems here. So yeah, Joe,
I'm going to have to follow you on X and start learning what y'all this whole subculture.
I would be honored if you would follow me on X.
Too much college football stuff. So maybe I need to fill it with
others. Oh, geez. This is the wrong rabbit hole to go down, my friend, but you're more than welcome to join me.
You mentioned wrestling though, but I just had some random stuff pop up today about Ric Flair walking through an airport and what he looks like he should die any second now. And
Rick is like, Rick is the Mick Jagger of professional wrestling.
He keeps kicking at it 2 9/10, every time the Grim Reaper shows up. It's
the guy who I think is the best caddy in our program. He's been there since the beginning. He's the guy I would, say when I was saying I learned from caddies. He's been caddy of the year. He's just the GOAT. Huge wrestling fan. And so then one of the guys that I'm best friends with on the caddy in the shack is a big wrestling fan too. And so they'll see each other from across the fairway sometimes and yell like wrestling things or whatever. And I remember it from the glory days more than I do current stuff.
All right. So Glory, go ahead then. Just real quick, who was your guy back in the day? Who'd you root for? What's your memory of it?
So, I would say, of course Hulk Hogan, but trying to remember, I loved some of later on when I was in college, like some of the Undertaker storylines and stuff. What I would say is my bigger memory. Oh, one of my favorite memories is of like Piper's Pit when they smashed Jimmy Snuka or
Coconut.
Whatever.
Coconut.
Yeah.
But
like during that era, I just loved how often it was on, like on Saturdays and Sundays. And then you'd go and, back when there wasn't as many options and you had PBS. And you'd have, it was NWA before it was WCW. And I just remember liking that and the interviews that they would have beforehand. Maybe were not as elaborate as they are now, but I I think maybe there's an argument they were better. So, and then The Rock, I loved. Yeah. So lots of good stuff. So, yeah.
All right. The most difficult question.
I gotta ask him, have you ever done a Macho Man Randy Savage impression? That's like an obligatory question.
I'm sure I have when I was younger, but I am not. No. My voice is way too high for Randy Savage. Yeah.
All right. The most difficult question of the podcast. It is Everyone Loves Pizza. What is your favorite style pizza?
Oh, a Detroit style pizza.
I figured.
There's not a close second. And that's not just me being a homer. I just, you know, I've lived in a lot of good cities and been to a lot of good places. And actually, this is a chain place in Michigan, but we got to have Jets when we went there last week. And the excitement that we had for Jets pizza was probably a little higher than some might think it needed to be. So I love Detroit style pizza. But other than the stuff they serve in St. Louis, Emo's Pizza, there's really no bad pizza.
All right. There you go. Get them St. Louis Steve's. You're probably true. Probably not a big St. Louis Blues fan, huh?
Although sorry, I have a good, Patrick. My friend tells a good story of when they won the cup, whatever it was, and this was one guy got kind of naked out on the course from the Blues, but we'll probably just leave him nameless so that, you know, nothing.
They weren't. There was no.
They were partying hard.
Yeah, there was no drinking out of the Stanley Cup involved at all. All right, before we get out of here, thank you for joining us. Everybody, please go to caddytales.co, caddietales.co. The book is Caddy Tales, a Looper search for lost golf balls and what he found instead. There's tons of great merchandise there at the website as well. Last question, last thing, what's on the horizon for Mark?
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, so many ideas, and sometimes I wish if I had more capital, you know, that things would move faster, but, you know, I'm kind of bootstrapping some things along. But the release of a second book in the first quarter of next year. I did announce my first Caddy Tales hosted golf trip out to St. George, Utah next November. It's about half full, and I got to do a better job of promoting that. You know, I'd love to get into a place where I could sell enough books and some swag that I only have to work these 6 months out of the year and be, you know, a little more comfortable. But I think there's a chance next winter of trying to head somewhere a little warmer for a few months and try out another course and for caddy and stuff. So
I'm just going to throw it out there, Mark. I mean, California is usually, well, it's kind of cold today, but
yeah. Yeah, no, there's, we'll see what options there are. Housing's always the issue with that, with guys, the younger guys who don't have families and mortgages have a little easier ability to be a nomad. My goal now, you know, long-term is I'd love to write a book a year. I'd love to collaborate with some brands and do some better merch. Right now I'm doing, you know, I do some print on demand type stuff, but there's so much more that can be done. I'd love to be able to, you know, speak to groups and whatever, and just, you know, yes, there's no doubt. I'm very honest. There's no doubt that I want to make a living and support my family. You know, there's a need to do that. But I also want to pair that need with doing things that are purposeful and meaningful. And so if there's some doors that open up where I can go speak to a group or share my story so that it might speak into their life a little bit, I'd love to be able to do that as well.
Follow him at Caddy Tales. Go to caddytales.co. Mark, thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And I'm sure we'll be talking to you in the future with all the cool stuff you got coming, man.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, guys. Really enjoyed it. Appreciate you.
Huge news, Wayfair shoppers. There's still time to shop Wayfair's Cyber Week sale. Thought the savings were over? Think again. Cyber Week, aka the holiday home stretch, is on now. Right now, get up to 70% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs, and seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor, or favorites that you'll use all year long. Plus, you can sit back and relax. With Wayfair's fast and easy shipping, everything home comes straight to your home, just in time for the holidays. Yep, even the big stuff. Didn't get everything on your Black Friday list? We got you. There's no place like home for the holidays, and no place like Wayfair for Cyber Week savings. Shop Wayfair's Cyber Week right now through December 7th and save up to 70% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.